I figured everybody that's here today should be out hiking, so that's who I'm talking to.
We gave up hiking.
To hear, to find out what it's all about. Well, that's why you have all afternoon and evening, and you can rush into it. Well, we'll give them the slow ones a couple more minutes to... Actually, I was supposed to give this yesterday, but those workers are just like all workers, you know. They want overtime, so they had to have another hour, and I had to have recuperate from my play from the day before. And I'm going to talk against this thing I've got in my hand right now. So it's do as I say, not as I do. These are the terms that have to do with what I'm talking about today. I usually teach at 8 o'clock in the morning, so if I put something on the board, by 8:30 they've woken up enough to try to write it. This is the F part of, and everything starts with F, as you can gather from it. And according to my students, they usually can't read what I wrote, so if any of these words aren't clear, you got them.
I'd like to say that I appreciate your testimony the other evening.
Oh, thank you.
What is the last word after figure there? Figure?
Figure.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You can have theological discussions during the worship service over there, but when someone comes and really gives a testimony, it means quite a lot more in many instances.
Yeah, I'm not sure how theological it was. It was just real. That's how my physical education is. It's not kosher, but it fits my fancy. Well, I think I will get started. I was supposed to be on yesterday, as I mentioned, and so I had the word play as my theme just because Paul had the word work. And the other, on Monday, they had worship. So this would take care of all of our problems that might confront us with worshiping, working, and then playing. And the percentage is probably quite true. Paul had to have 4 days for the workaday world, and we had 1 day for worship and 1 day for play. And that's kind of how the world goes in terms of how we live. And I'm here today to tell you that we don't want to live our lives with work alone. Leisure alone can cause the same kinds of problems. But for work, worship, and play, that fitness is necessary. So I'm going to be talking quite a bit about fitness, but in terms of then being able to play and being able to have leisure. Also, my button tells you what my thing is this year, and that is that girl babies and girl children and girl adults are human beings, and they have the same physical needs in terms of movement patterns as men do. We all were made for organic action. There's not a one of us women that were made to live a sedentary form of life. All of our organs in terms of movement patterns are the same. We all have heart, lungs, muscles, and all of these need to work in exact ways. And if there's anything that we have done harmful to half of our population, it's not so much whether they had money for or they didn't have money for athletics, but that all of our books of 5 years ago had one girl playing baseball, and she was holding the bat wrong at that, in terms of our elementary books. So in play, I think we do pretty well with our little girls for the first 3 years of their lives. We treat them pretty much alike. If we make them conform to a cradle, to a playpen with the girls, we probably have done the same thing with the boys, which is my probably first gripe with raising children. Children were not made for being strapped in. You notice what has happened to the Chinese feet when they are strapped. And children who are strapped have the same kind of results. We were talking this morning about the whole idea that children that didn't crawl couldn't read. And we've decided in our unscientific minds that part of the problem could well have been that the parents did not permit the child to crawl. And the block is not the physical inability to crawl, but the mental inability and blocks that were put upon the children in their early years so that they really had an inhibited kind of life. This is one of our problems with Upper America, that they want to organize their children. They want to organize them in leagues. They want to organize them in playgrounds with fences around them. They want to organize them with little tiny swimming pool areas and to keep them in these little boxes. If there's anything great about Holden, it's how you see all kinds of 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds running about. And if somebody falls, one of us picks them up, and you know they find their mother then about their way. And you can't imagine the great freedom feeling that this has upon the children. Sociologists are doing some studies on how we have inhibited play of our children. So in terms of play, I think that we need to start with the 3-year-old thinking about the girls needing the same kinds of play. The Spartan women, for example, were forced to play and to play vigorously until age 20 so that they would produce fit boys for war. Now, unfortunately, if the girl happened to be weak, she didn't live past 5, but neither did the little boys, where fitness was the only objective, and of course, fitness for war. Which brings me to one of our problems. In the past, that word fitness was used in our school systems, in our government, and in all ways to mean military alertness. Those of you who know, well, we all know about the Second World War, and some of you may know about the First. Everything in the school ceases in terms of play and leisure, and then we became interested in fitness and the problems of fitness. The First World War, over 60% of our men were not fit for service. The Second World War, 50% of our men were not fit for service. The Korean War, they took them anyway. The Vietnam War, they took them anyway. But they were not prepared. And our country has notoriously not worried about fitness except in war until the Eisenhower meeting and then Kennedy with his touch football, and then everybody got racked up knees with the touch football. And then we had something called a Cross-Weber test. And I'm sure many of you read about it in the newspaper, which said the Swedish children and the English children are stronger and better than we are. So suddenly, all of the school systems decide we must have fit children. It was a false kind of test. It was a flexibility test. And flexibility is the least thing we need. But that was the test that said American children are not strong. And so we hustled about to find a test and to get all children stiff at the beginning of each school year and then again at the end to show progress. And that's not the kind of fitness that I'm talking about. But it made our country alert, and I think that is important. And it's important because of how we live. And we have some problems about how we have selected to live. But I see them as positives if we recognize them. And the first problem I see is the world of automation, or the push-button era that we live in. Now, any of you that live up the hill or up in the lodges, you know what now has to happen to you in terms of you can't walk to the curb, jump in the car, get to school, get to the bank, get to church, or whatever. So the car has been a detriment, in a sense, to our being, if we permit it to. But it also has been a positive because we can drive 10 miles. In Washington, D.C., I can drive to almost any kind of sport activity I want to do, all the way from hiking to water to to rocks, to playing a sport, to almost anything, which just amazed me that I could be in trees in 6 or 7 miles. And so the car has brought this closer to me. So we can take it as a negative if we want, but it can also have a positive effect when we use it. The washing machine and the dryer. Now the washing machine has given us all kinds of quick, positive kinds of things. But women don't use their arms and shoulders anymore in terms of the sheets. And the hanging. You can't believe how good hanging out clothes is in terms of fitness. And now we toss it in a dryer. And so I see this as a positive for me. I hate it all. Dishwasher, I love. But with that, remembering that we were made for organic action, then we need to use our push button and our automation to free us for leisure kinds of time. And if we get fitness first, then we can get to leisure. And so we have to remember that the push button age has made us functionally ineffective unless we then do something for the fun of it in terms of our activities. So it's a negative in the sense that we don't have to go get the horses ready, get going to church, walk to school for 2 miles, walk back home again. And so we can use this time for our own sort of refreshment and self-renewal kind of thing. But it puts a responsibility on us that we haven't had in the past. Your grandparents didn't have to worry about fitness, really. If they worked on the farms, if they had a family of 5 or 6, and they had to keep track of them on the farms, even in when they began to move to the cities, if they worked in the factories, even if they worked in a kind of office, they walked to work, most of them. So it's only a modern problem that we live in the middle third of our body, most of us, right here. And that's not the most efficient part of our being. And so functionally, our heart, our cardiovascular systems, our liver, simply do not function well. And of course, because this isn't working well, where's that little word, FAT? That is, as I see it, our number, or not in order of preference, but a very important problem, fat. Now, most people don't like to call it fat. We call it tiny bit overweight. We call it obesity. We have all kinds of nice little terms for it. But the fact is we're eating ourselves to death. And a form of fitness, in the first place, lets you eat more. And it can help you in terms of feeling better if you are a little more careful. And I'll talk about that weight control in a few minutes. So automation is number one. Number two, besides the overweight problem, is our double rhythm of life. We don't really have a nice, smooth, easy rhythm of life. We have this kind of life and that kind of life. And hurry, hurry, this has to get done, this has to get done, that has to get done. You've got to do it immediately. You've got to get to church on time. We've got to get here on time. We've got to get to school on time. And we're exhausted by the middle of the day. And that's something that our whole society is in. So we almost can't just decide ourselves. I can hardly drive an automobile in a normal sort of way at the end of the day. All I can think of is I got to be at that stoplight too. I got to see if my car will go zip just a little bit faster. And all of this takes nervous energy. One of the greatest things that's happened to us in automation is that 55-mile speed limit in terms of driving. I'll bet all of you can drive 30 miles farther and not know it by following that 55-mile speed limit in terms of your bodies. Even your backs don't get as tired. And I drive a lot from Washington, D.C. to Gary, Indiana. And I was always exhausted until the 55-mile speed limit. And suddenly I'm just driving along. And I'm even seeing what's on either side, the freeway, and my eyes are worse. So that it's a speed down instead of a speed up. And I think that double way of life, you know yourself. in terms of your living. And it's all of society. And so we have to force it in some way. And the answer to it is in part, I think, learning to relax. And connected with that same problem, I think, is the problem of tension and anxiety. And that our tension and anxiety level is killing us. And you know this by looking at what is our number one killer for men. Heart attacks, all kinds of nervous disorders. They used to have them at 50, now they have them at 40, and I'll bet all of you can tell me a couple men who have had heart attacks in the 30 age limit. Anybody on the 30 age limit? And women, you'll be happy to know as you begin to work in the work-a-day world that you're catching up. You used to have heart attacks at 60, and now you have moved into the 50 category in large numbers. And it's the working woman that has moved into it, not the woman who has selected the household kinds of life. So when you decide to go into that workaday world, and I believe in it for those that want to, remember you're also adding pressure, and more pressure than your husband has. Because you still have to come home, even if he's helping, to do what your guilt tells you is your work. And so you're living with the kind of tension of guilt that you just didn't. Even though women's libs say it's okay, ladies, for you to do this, your background tells you, I'm not so sure. So you've invited yourself into the heart attack world and the stress world. Another evidence of this is that, and this I want to read to be sure I have it right, in 1965, Americans ate up 45 billion aspirin tablets, took 30 billion sleeping pills, and woke up with almost as many tranquilizers, 13 billion barbiturates, and what's that, Philip? That too. Now, what's the other kind besides barbiturates that they're...
Amphetamines.
Yeah, amphetamines, which means that we had about 24 ups per person and 35 downs per person if we divided these off. In 1974, the estimate is that this number may have doubled. And that's not to also mention alcoholism, which has doubled with women and tripled with teenagers, and the whole dope scene itself. Not to mention my little caffeine love, the Coke love, and this sort of thing. And I'm sure our pharmacists could give us all kinds of illustrations of this. Not that some of these are not necessary, but that our way of life exaggerates this kind of problem, and that we therefore recognize it and have to counter it. Our TV tells us it's all okay, everybody, because we have Excedrin now. And besides that, we've got Cope. And so we're really ready for life. But what our heads are trying to tell us is, whoa, baby, slow down. Make your way of life a little more in keeping with folly, with a kind of quieter kind of fellowship, with a family kind of life that's not all tying us up in knots. The next thing, as I mentioned before, was the obesity problems that we face, and part of this is also from the stress. Part of it is from lack of physical activity. No matter how you hack it, it's very simple. If you put more fuel into your being than calories that you can use up, so the fuel stays in, it stays in, and it stays in all parts of your body. So your input surpasses your output, and result. Your output surpasses your input, and there's a chance of a balance. Lots of people say, but it's not my fault, it's metabolism. Well, if your metabolism is different, and that's about 1% of you, or at the most 2%, in terms of serious problems. Now, there's a lot with in-between kinds of problems. Then you have to cut down your input and increase your output. As simple as that. We're finding with retired folks. My father was a truck driver, And for 3 years after he retired, he still ate like a truck driver. But he didn't live like a truck driver. A truck driver that delivers within the city, not a long distance one. So that he went to something like 75 stores a day. And he ate the same way and gained 30 pounds. And he simply was not exercising for the amount of food. So my solution is I eat like mad and I play like mad. And I have a balance. But if I don't, then I simply have to cut down. And it's not so silly about that push away from the table. It really works. It's that second bite that causes the problems. And in terms of the food, I'm merely talking about input and output. The nutritional part of it, you all know, and I can't talk about it because I'm so unnutritional in how I eat, and I sit here with this coffee cup. But if you can just remember the input and output problem, that can be a major one. Then another one, which all fit together, is the cigarette crave, the drinking, and the various kinds of dope as a major problem in our society, not necessarily for us, but also perhaps for us. And it's becoming increasingly more important in terms of women. We have had very few, at least that we knew about, women alcoholics. But we are finding that whatever women do, they do in large kinds of quantities. Cigarette smoking, we're finding the same thing. If a woman really smokes, she really smokes. If she drinks, she really drinks. And this may be the new pressures that are on her. She really had a much easier life when everybody wasn't telling her she had to work. She has to do this and she can't find fulfillment. And a whole bunch of them are finding all kinds of fulfillment at home. But I think the negative part of the women's movement is putting pressures on women that they don't need. Now, it's freeing a lot of women, and they're much happier. A Julie Hayne is much happier because she's free. But others really love, Carol loves her role as mother of seven children. And to tell her, hey, don't enjoy those kids at home, rush off to work, you know, is as ridiculous as freeing others to work. But in the middle class, and upper class is where we're really finding problems with women and alcoholism. We're finding much more in teenagers because they have received the program about dope, and so they're much more concerned about the dope problem. And so beer and alcohol has caused many of the problems. So, and the last problem in this, and then I'll go on and talk about how we can work in our life style, is the pollution not only of the air, but pollution of noise. We're finding that pollution of noise is harder on the nervous system than on any other kind of pollution. Factories are trying to put in what they call white noise background to try to counter this. But you'll find in all large cities, traffic patterns are causing nervous breakdowns in terms of having freeways near large areas. One of the biggest problems they're finding are you and me, motel dwellers who dwell right next to the highway. After we've had a hard day of driving, then we park our cars right next to the highway and zip, zip, zip. And our ears hear it. And our fatigue is great. Fatigue is a big factor to many of our problems. It affects our work. It affects our play. It affects our whole spiritual beings. Both mental and physical fatigue is a great problem that we need to deal with, and that's one of the reasons I believe that leisure can counter this. And obviously, I'm talking mostly about physical leisure, but an awful lot of you can get rid of tensions, fatigues in the musical world, in the dramatic world, in the literary world. I find nothing but see if I have it here, frustration when I attempt, for example, the art world, because I just don't have any kind of perspective. When I try the music world on the piano and nobody's around to listen, then I'm fine. In fact, it's one of the things that I will do without having to do it perfectly. And so I have finally bought a piano and play it almost every day, and all decisions are made on the piano, and everybody hates me in the apartment from 10 to 10, but I love it. Now, if anybody comes, then the stress begins and I won't play anymore. And I think that's important to remember about sporting events. As soon as you people go watch your little kids playing, little league, you have added a stress that is very difficult. It's like when I teach, I can watch some kid learning tennis down on court four, and they're swinging nicely, and they're having a great time. And I stroll down there, and the worst thing for learning a sport is tension, tight tension. And they miss the ball, they swing it out, they hit it late, they can't get it over the net, and it's the stress that I have put on them. So even though your children think they want you, they really are better off playing alone and not being pressured into watching. Kids doing plays alone are just about as well off. It's one of the reasons we're not having Wednesday Vesper here with the children performing, because it's not for the children. It's for the parents seeing the children in action. I have the same gripe with having umpires for nine-year-old boys. Nine-year-old boys have played in the sandlots forever. You people played in the sandlots, and you got took care of your fights. You took care of your frustrations. If Johnny took the bat and went home, you were nicer to Johnny next time. You didn't have a bat. If he's cheating on the bases, you let him know, and you take care of it. And as soon as you put an umpire there, then you're trying to get him to take some chances with it. Now, eventually, in highly skilled sports, you need it. Because you want to play, you don't want to concentrate on errors. But most of the time, we get along all right over there on that volleyball court without an umpire. Somebody calls it. Somebody's unhappy occasionally. But we have much more time for actual play than we would with the authority figure. To me, in leisure, when you put the authority figure there, you've taken away some of the fun of the activity. And that they need plenty of exposure to it, but they need freedom in terms of it. So care, I think, needs to be taken in this kind of world. And the pollution world, you really need to think about in your own house. Some women, I can't understand how they can tolerate, after they themselves have perhaps worked all day or whatever, some of that noise that comes out of the stereo kinds of rooms. And I have a guy upstairs from me that I don't know when he works, but he has stereo, and it's a drum stereo, and he's Latin American. And it just really drives me right up a wall. Until even exercise, you know, I could do jump rope by it. And it just doesn't even help my whole world. So we're really having trouble with noise pollution. And everybody's talked about air pollution, so I don't have to talk about that. Actually, when I got up to Cloudy, I thought I had some kind of pollution, but it was all inside the other day. That's one of these that go up 1,000 in a mile. And it tells you whether you have this fitness or not, and I have it in the world. So I think we're really sitting ourselves to death, we're worrying ourselves to death, we're eating ourselves to death, we're polluting ourselves to death, and some of us are drinking and doping ourselves to death. And it simply has to stop in terms of any kind of lifestyle. I think particularly for us, we need to remember that Christ tells us, and we can read it in many places, that we need to have life and to have it more abundantly. And that one of the ways is to have a body that is able to survive in the society, we're able to work in the society, we're able to play in it. And that fitness is one way of achieving this. I also think that the Puritans, as you know, had this thing called the work ethic, and theoretically the Puritans did not play, and an idle child is a wild child, and you shouldn't spend your life playing. But when you start reading about what happened in the Puritan world, they merely had to find other ways for their recreation. Now, obviously, they physically had to be fit in order to survive. But think about, what did they do for their fun life, or what we would call play or leisure? Any of you recall what the colonials were about, in the particularly the Puritans? What kind of substitute did they have? Yeah, only they didn't call them social gatherings.
Like husking bees.
Yeah,
quilting
bees. Yeah, we're going to have a quilting bee, ladies. Husbands were having corn husking, and we're going to have a barn raising party. And it's great. Everybody comes and builds the barn, and then we play. Oh, and baptisms. Baptisms were always great. They used food really as one of their substitutes for play. But I think it's important in the church that we remember the Puritans in terms of how they combined, really, their work and their play. We'll also find in the southern states, they had what they called Muster Day. And Muster Day was really for the military purposes. And because they lived so far apart, they'd have it one weekend a month. And so for 3 hours, as far as we can figure it, they had all these military maneuvers. But it was always at a park. And for the next 2 days, then they had games and contests and gambling, which was one of the favorite activities of the southern gentlemen. They had that new game that the quiet men would play in the taverns. It's just come out, backgammon. It was one of the favorites of the southern plantation. That game, by the way, is all the way back from the 1100s, and we're just now picking it up again. But all these board games are good kinds of leisure, even if it's not a fitness kind of leisure, because it's a relaxing, which is one of, I think, the responsibilities that we have. So if you can think about that, it's almost a responsibility to play or for leisure. There's no way we were made for spectator sports. We would have been born with these huge eyes and big feet. And I think that that's one of the things that you also need to watch in terms of your children, that they don't get so engrossed in the boob tube that they don't play. I think the greatest thing is that we all survive from anywhere from a week to 2 months up here without the boob tube. And that there is something called the newspaper that can be a substitute for it. There's all kinds of things. Now, there's great things on TV. I like the news, so I don't have to read it. I like some of the programs. Once in a while, I love canon. I like to watch various kinds of things, but it makes us very lazy. Spectators at football, and then you've got to have beer, and then you've got to have salted peanuts, and you've got to have all of these kinds of things. And we know people are watching them, because New York City had a water level fall between the halves of the Super Bowl game. Which means the people who were watching the Super Bowl, you know, it went down a level. Everybody was flushing the johns at a certain level. And it's laughable, but it's true in terms of our society. Now, great things have come. A wide world of sport, I think, has brought greatness to kids seeing something besides their baseball heroes, something besides their football heroes, and a sport that the 90% that don't play football and baseball of the kids see. The whole tennis, the skiing, the swimming, all of these kinds of sports, I think, are great. I think Wide World of Sport probably has some of the neatest stuff to watch to get some ideas of kinds of leisure. I think Holden here should remind you of the importance of outdoor kinds of life, and that we tend to forget sometimes about the outdoor life. I think one of the problems, of course, is to remember that you want to drive the shortest distance you possibly can for this fun and this activity. Otherwise, we end up in some of the difficulties of it. But I think that fitness in and of itself is dull. I think jogging is dull. I think running is dull. I think formalized exercise is dull. But you really don't have to do that. If you use your bodies in movement patterns that are fun. Now the problem with it is when you begin any new sport, you have random movements and it is not efficient or effective. I know a lot of women who can play 2 hours of tennis and their only exercise is running after the ball, but they usually choose to walk after it. And so that you aren't, for example, in tennis, a beginning tennis player does not get a lot of exercise. A beginning badminton player in the backyard doesn't really get a lot of exercise. And so your quickest, surest way is by dull exercise, or if you can make jogging fun. Jogging really is the number one. Of cardiovascular, it gives you strength, it gives you endurance, and if you reach out in your step patterns, it can give you flexibility. But swimming is almost equal to it, and it's a lot more fun as far as I can see, but a lot of you can't get that. But swimming is one of the activities. Rope jumping is another activity that you can do at home without the jogging. But jogging has become a fad and fashionable to do, and it is effective for fitness because it gives strength, it gives endurance, and a little bit of flexibility. But in terms of fitness then, which I think you need in some way to enjoy your leisure, if you are a weekend athlete, you sometimes end up in more pain than it was worth it in the first place. But by doing something 5 minutes in the morning or 10 minutes, say, every other day, you can get yourself into a fit condition. And the important thing for all of you, whether and for children too, from 10 to 100, is that you don't start out all gung-ho. You don't go to cloudy in one day if you haven't gone to hard ever. And you don't do it if you have sat on your posteriors all year long. Then you're testing your heart. And there's no question that we have had people die from starting a fitness program. Now, we try to hide that in our field, like it doesn't happen, but it does. And so you can't start stupidly at it. It would be like trying to become an engineer when you haven't gone through the school. You've got to go through the system. And you need to start slow. For example, a woman who wants to, 40 years of age, who wants to decide she wants to jog, she needs to jog a mile in 15 minutes, not in 6 minutes. So it's a walk-run kind of thing. And the same with men. A good physical exam, of course, also helps. If any of you are near a university or any kind of setting where you can take a stress test first, this really helps if you're going to start on a program. Every year before I come here, we have a stress program, which is to test what's happening to your cardiovascular system, and is more predictive than an electrocardiogram, because you're in action, and it tells the potential of heart kinds of problems. I know the University of Washington has it. A lot of big firms are making their sit-down junior executives take a test to see where they are. And then the test tells you about where you can start. But you never start where that Air Force book tells you to start. Because it's nice, strong Air Force men that are trying to tell you what to do. And your body will tell you. When your body is tired, it is time to stop. When fatigue sets in, you're asking for strain, you're asking for torn muscles, you're asking for a buildup of lactic acid or stiffness in your muscles, and more injury can occur. So what you want to do is just a little bit past what your body can do. You don't start lifting 100 pounds when you decide you want a weightlifting program, because it pulls on your muscles. You don't start with the split in a flexibility test. In fact, you don't even start with touching your toes. If you haven't touched your toes for 10 years, and you decide, I'm going to start touching my toes, fine. But in the meantime, you've pulled the muscles in your back, you've pulled your hamstring muscles, and you're asking for injury to occur. Everything in moderation is what is important. But to enjoy anything that you want to do in leisure, a certain fitness or tone is important. And the three things to work on is endurance, strength, and flexibility. Now, in terms of strength, strength is the amount of work that the muscle can do until fatigue sets in. And you can build that up in several ways. One is a straight weightlifting program. One is to use whatever muscle you want to strengthen. For example, a push-up for the arm and shoulder girdle. And by doing one more as you feel fatigued, or one more than you did the day before, or 2 days before. Actually, you only need it 3 times a week for a good fitness program. You don't have to do it every day. You also can build it up, for example, with my finger. I can exercise my finger to get it strong. I can put a weight on it and then exercise my finger. Then I can do it faster. And those are the ways that you build up strength. And that's the idea of running, is that you do it faster in a short amount of time. And then if you want to put a load on your back, you can even add to it more. The second is endurance. And endurance is vital to our cardiovascular system. That's what keeps our whole blood flowing. This is what is important to prevent arteriosclerosis. Is that what it is? With the shutting down of the artery is a form of exercise. It also is, the stress test tells you what's happening. For example, the whole problem with cholesterol is not cholesterol in and of itself. It's cholesterol in our stress society. Eskimos have more cholesterol than we do. African tribes have found to have more cholesterol than we do. But they don't do with their bods what we do in terms of the tension and the stress. We're always in a stressful kind of position. You just don't find that in some of the other societies. And so the heart, they may die of malnutrition or something else, or a little arrow in them, but not in terms of what we all are finding to die on. So the endurance comes with any movement that uses your cardiovascular. For example, going to Holden, going up is cardiovascular, coming down is strength. Going up is your respiratory system, going down is your leg strength. And you know it when you start on it. And those are the two things then you need before you come for maximum enjoyment. So fitness is almost necessary for more fun. And then more fun is possible with fitness. And so to have a total joy of effort, sometimes a straight exercise program is one way of getting it. It's my last choice for myself. But for a lot of people, it's the beginning. Because otherwise, you're not going to enjoy a sport or an activity if you are already fatigued. Also, if you are fatigued from life, and mental fatigue affects physical fatigue. So when you're mentally tired, because you begin to get tight, and the first place is in your neck. If we could keep our necks relaxed, we'd be much better off in terms of our whole being and in terms of our leisure life. So that's one of the things we need to think about. Now the third part you always hear about is flexibility. And as I said, that's really least important and the most damaging. If I decide to touch my toes, and I haven't for a long time, I am inviting trouble to my back. Deep knee bend is also one of the problems. Maybe you have read in your school systems about the duck walk. The duck walk, you know, that's down and, you know, duck walking. Well, our knees, unfortunately, if we have any bad points about us, we weren't given good knees. Males weren't, females weren't. And that takes care of all of us in terms of our knees. And we get our knees going outward and we're in trouble. So deep knee bends. You really need to be careful in terms of not doing too many of them, because as soon as fatigue sets in, and that's soon, with these deep knee bends, you're inviting trouble. And you might as well have it skiing as getting it just from an exercise. I mean, you know, you might as well have it enjoying it. And so that's a slow process. Another one, and watch your kids for this, it happens in school all the time. That's where you have kids put this up and bend down on one knee. You're really asking for trouble. Be careful of whatever you do in terms of your knees. Our knees are the most vulnerable spot. The other problem is that that's also our only springs. We don't have springs in our backs. And so in landing, in falling, in whatever, remember that the spring is in your knees as you give with your body. That's one of our biggest problems with back problems, is it's not flexible, and it's not We're not even made for that kind of thing. So in flexibility, rule of thumb is don't go beyond the normal range of movement. That I can take my thumb and put it there, I'm asking for stretching a muscle. And remember, our muscles are like rubber bands, and they stretch and they stretch. And then when you stretch, then they break. And our muscles really are like that. We can't pull them beyond a normal range, and we don't need to. Actually, for example, another one is your kids doing back bends. Nobody in normal life needs to be able to do a back bend. I mean, it's just not essential to life. And so when I decide to show off with a back bend, I'm asking for trouble. Now, if your kids have done back bends, if your girls have done splits, and continue to do so, there's no problem. But the problem is, in 6 weeks, I can take away every bit of flexibility that you have gained. So if I give you a 9-week program to develop flexibility, in 6 weeks I can take it away from you by not doing it. So that goes first. And that you should work on that the slowest. If you want to increase your flexibility for better turns, in skiing, for example, you do need some exercise, but you need to start them slow. And you eventually can get your hands to your toes if it makes you feel good, but you don't start with it, and you don't bounce right down. Remember, particularly for women, our backs are not strong. Our strength is in our thighs, or as I was teaching Carol Lehman, quadriceps. Our quadriceps have it. I can pull 2,000 equivalent of 2,000 pounds on my quadriceps. 300 pounds on my back is a full pull and I begin to hurt. Remember, all of us, almost women particularly, have lordosis. And so we're pulling on our backs. This is why, for example, in school or on exercise programs, I cringe every time I see this leg lifting, two legs lifting, and then you lower them slowly. In the meantime, your back comes off the floor. Well, you're asking for trouble in your back. It's the worst exercise for women you can imagine. And yet our exercise programs sometimes have them. So you need to be sensible. When something starts to hurt and you're trying to get strong abdomen and your back hurts, then you've done it wrong. The whole thing is, you know, this leg lifting is for abdomen strength. But if my abdomen is strong enough so I don't pull my back off, I don't need the exercise. And so you've got to find, like, a slow sit-up, what has to do it. So in your exercise program, you just don't pick up any old thing. But looking through the Cooper book is pretty good. The aerobic book is a pretty good book in terms of exercise. And the Air Force book, once you cut it in half, whatever they say, double it to do to start with, you know, is a good kind of program. But those are really the three things are basic to fitness. Now, coordination is just neat to have, but it isn't basic to fitness. You can be a cerebral palsy, you can be a polio, you can be many things and still be fit within your own body. And that's what's important to remember. With arthritis, for example, you can still be fit within your own body. With rheumatoid arthritis, particularly, the joints need to move. With osteoarthritis, you have to be more careful because you're asking your joints. And that's why it's important when arthritis first hits, for example, as preventative. You go to a doctor and find out what kind it is. Every time a joint is swollen, you need to find out. It's not natural and normal to have swollen joints, to wake up with aching body, unless you went up to Holden and back. And so remember, we have all kinds of ways of telling us that there's something wrong functionally with our body. And arthritis particularly is important to know what kind you have for what you should do. Now, if you happen to have both osteo and rheumatoid, then you're countering it, and that's some therapist that can tell you what to do. But generally on rheumatoid, exercise, for example, is good for it, and you need to get into it. But the next thing is ability to relax. And this, I think, is absolutely important, and you can do it yourself. It has a little bit to do with posture. For example, all of you slump down nice and way down. Now stick your heads up and look at me after you're all slumped over? And what do you feel?
Oh,
yeah, tension here. And the other hand, get nice and round-shouldered and down, and take a nice deep breath. And let it out, and notice the pull that it has. But on the other hand, sit here and type. Put your abdomens in, and tighten them. Pull them, pull them, pull them, pull them. Now breathe and keep them in. And relax. And what have you just done? Yeah, you've really developed working on dynamic kind of strength, isometric exercise. And it's pulling in, and all that will do, and this is why a lot of athletes have stopped this, because it doesn't really do anything for their athletic skill, but it does things for that fat abdomen. If you would do that 6 times a day, for about trying to hold it for 6 seconds, you're going to find that your abdomen gets stronger. And it has 10 times more value than the girdle, because all the girdle does is pull it in one place, and you know, anything that's pulled in one place blossoms out in another. And so it was the most useless thing anybody ever thought of, in a sense. All you need is this kind of thing. And this also works then with relaxing. Another thing is, if you don't have low blood pressure, you can try this one. Put your head down sort of on your chest, close your eyes, and you slowly roll your head around. And roll it down. And let it rest there. Roll it to the left. And down. And let it rest. And then slowly just open your eyes and look up. And if you would do that in the middle of your workaday world, our first headache, cope kind or excedrin kind, comes in this neck region. The first thing that gets tight, watch yourself when you're angry. It's here. Watch yourself when those figures don't add up. My bank account is all wrong. It's in here. When some kid, I'm lecturing away, and some kid is sound asleep, and some other kid next to him is talking to him or whatever, and I have this great point. I mean, it's absolutely imperative to know what happened to the Romans in their physical fitness, and they're sleeping. I can feel it, you know, start in my neck, Anna. I have one girl that's a knitter, but when she's gotten, and the first 6 weeks she drove me out of my tree while she's knitting, and I'm talking and giving her these great words of wisdom, and she's knitting, and I'm having a fit. I can just feel my tension. She takes the first test, she gets an A+, and I say, all right, so she knits. And she knits herself through that some way or other, and she had it, and she had it all. And she had it in organized kinds of form. And besides that, she finished a sweater and booties and a scarf. 3 days a week, an hour. I couldn't do it, you know, in a million years. The problem was that some other kid that, you know, that got the C did it, I probably would have been nervous the rest of the time. But it starts in here. But for relaxing, that tightening here, or another thing is tighten your arm just as tight as you can so that you know what's happening. What's happening? Tension. Then start to let go of the hand, and it's got to sort of fall. Now do your feet. Tighten them, tighten them. Oh, Jeff, terrible pain. And then let them go. Let them go. Now close your eyes. Let your head go. I'd never dare do this with my class. But! And if there's a tiny jump on the up, that tells what our bodies can do, and that we should be able to do this. Lack of sleep if it's just an easy time. A pillow in the back, because most of us don't have, you know, this nice straight back. A small pillow can help. Not so much a pillow on your neck. A pillow on your neck is really inviting the kinds of tension. If you tend to have round shoulders, the same thing is true. I don't know who invented the pillow. I love it, but it's bad in terms of our whole being. You'd be better off with the pillow at your feet and your varicose veins and whatever. And your circulatory system would be better. And after climbing, it really would be better. Any woman that's had more than a couple children should really practice that kind of feet in the air situation. As a matter of fact, absolutely back and feet straight up is one of the best for the whole circulatory system, and that's not even work in terms of kinds of exercise. And so it's really important to try to be able to relax on your own. And tension and relaxation is good. This is why activity is good, and then a slowdown in terms of activity and fitness. Then in a very general sense in terms of activity, I think whenever you're beginning to think of a new activity, that the lifetime sports, for example, if you can afford it at all, you learn a new activity with lessons. Because the tension is short in terms of it, and the advantages of it are great. It's pretty hard for most of you to try to teach your kids something. The only thing I really plead about kids is fathers, teach your daughters how to throw. Mothers, leave them alone. Unless you can throw. Because I think the future of the athletics and the fitness and the whole leisure thing for women is that they can throw. Because all of the activities need this. And we've got a study from California now that shows during the Second World War, mothers tried to teach their little boys how to throw. And we had a whole bunch of sixth graders about 10 years later, after the war was over, someplace about 54, where all of a sudden they saw these little boys that were throwing. They did a cross sample, and they found about 93% of those boys had mothers from the age of 3 to 7, and from the learning age for throwing and for mimicking. And so if the mother is throwing this way, and our arms tend to let us do that to start with, although in terms of the structure of the child, until 12 years old, there really is no difference in strength, endurance, or flexibility of boys and girls. So, for example, legally, little league, there's really no difference, except cultural difference in the girl up till 12. Now, after 12, there are hormonal differences, which means that the female hormone secretes so that we develop fatty tissue. Adipose fat is enhanced by the women's hormone. The male hormone, on the other hand, enhances the muscle. And that's why on an average 140-pound male and female, the strength factor with the same amount of exercise will be almost twice as great with the male. And this is why, which is one of my things, women should not have to compete against men for positions on intercollegiate teams, for example. The overlap, the 46% overlap, happens at the top where our strength is the same. The strongest women are as strong as the average men. And the overlap is about 46%. But the top level strength, endurance, flexibility, well, strength particularly, strength and speed really, of the male. The top male athlete will always surpass that of the top female athlete trained the same. Now we have Olympic records that women are beating, but the men are paralleling it, and it's easier to reach up. So with the same kind of training, we are not going to have as much strength or speed in any sport, therefore, that takes that. We really cannot compete equally. The culture doesn't do that to us. Now, obviously, the culture has made us even farther behind, and this is what I'm pleading for, that you don't let this happen in your girls. But as I was telling about this study, the boys learning from the mothers were throwing the same way. So if you ladies throw this way, let your husbands teach the girl to play. But you can help your girls by trying to play even if you're not great at it. Because remember, the model is set by the family and by the home. And if the mother doesn't play, it's more likely that even today that the female will not. The same with the father. If the father does absolutely nothing, the boy and the girl is likely not to play. And so that it's important for you as parents and teachers or whatever to know that the model is being set by you. And even if you'd rather watch TV, moving out and trying to do something is going to help in terms of the leisure. And it's going to be more important for your kids than for you because of the automation, that we are going to have to force ourselves for those that are not interested to do something in terms of activity. Now, this doesn't mean that there's going to be a lot of kids that don't like, when they're older, for organized sports. I don't think organized sports are at all essential if we make them non-essential, and I think we should. For the artistic, for the dramatic, for the intellectual boy who really isn't mad crazy about sports, it's up to us to just be sure they have a level of fitness. And the same with the girls. That I don't see organized sport absolutely essential for every kid. You know, he's going to be some kind of misfit without it. But it's up to us to be sure that he has a fitness level, that he can enjoy his leisure the most, that he can enjoy his reading, that he can enjoy whatever. And for the workaday world, I think that the fitness is important and that it's up to us to do it. I think in the church that it's a natural kind of fellowship that we can have, and that families can do this, and that we must do this in terms of a fitness. So it's time to close and an ending, and then if any of you want to stay and ask any kind of questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them.